in unforeseen events, let us not forget that all are sent by thee. Teach us to act firmly and wisely, without embittering and embarrassing others. Give us strength to bear the fatigue of the coming day with all that it shall bring. Direct our will, teach us to pray. Pray thou thyself in us. Amen.
The gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, is recognized for a motion.
Mr. Speaker, the journal for December 15th has been examined and found to be correct. I move that it stand approved as written.
Representative Lewis moves that the journal for December 15th be approved as written. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The journal is approved as written. Ratification of bills and resolutions. The clerk will read.
The following clerk reports the following resolution duly ratified, properly enrolled, and prepared for presentation to the Office of the Secretary of State. Senate Joint Resolution 6, a joint resolution providing for the confirmation of Andrew Heath as Special Superior Court Judge. Senate Joint Resolution 7, a joint resolution providing for the confirmation of Adam Matthew Conrad as a Special Superior Court Judge.
Noted. Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soko are recognized to send forth a committee report from the Committee on Finance. The clerk will read.
Representatives Brawley, Sane, Hastings, Martin, Setzer, and Soko, Finance Committee Report, Senate Bill 4, Bipartisan Ethics, Elections, and Court Reform, favorable.
Senate Bill 4, favorable, be added to today's calendar. What purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, rise?
Make a motion.
The gentleman may state his motion.
And followed by an inquiry to the chair.
Does the gentleman wish to state his motion first or inquire to the chair?
State the motion.
The gentleman may state the motion he intends to offer.
I would move that we adjourn sine die.
Okay. The chair does not recognize the gentleman's motion. The gentleman is now recognized for an inquiry to the chair.
I'm looking at the rules, and it says that a motion to adjourn is always proper. I'm wondering why I can't get recognized to make a proper motion.
The chair in the general direction of the House can elect whether or not to recognize a member for a particular motion. Part of the purpose, frankly, is I suspect, in the interest of time, if you didn't have that, then every member could go through trying to make a motion to adjourn one after another, and just consume the body's time. The chair feels pretty confidently that the gentleman's motion would probably fail, and that it would just be an interest in the time. But that's the purpose under which.
And, Your Honor, I mean, Mr. Speaker, I would comment that I make that motion with all due respect to the chair or to the speaker.
Noted. Senate Bill 4, the clerk will read.
Senators Rucho, Rabin, and Tucker, Senate Bill 4, a bill to be entitled an act to consolidate the function of the elections, campaign finance, lobbying, and ethics under the state agency created in the North Carolina Bipartisan State Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement, and to clarify General Assembly the authority to correct defects identified by court appointments and distinct plans to restore partisan elections for North Carolina Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals, and to modify appellate reviews to certain cases and to modify terms for individual commissioners. General Assembly of North Carolina annex.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Stamros,
to debate the bill?
The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, this is somewhat unusual. I'm not a sponsor of the bill, but I'm going to explain part four, which begins on page 20, and the reason is at a certain time I'm going to have to go to the doctor for an hour, but I'll be back, and it's don't send me a sympathy card. I was playing tennis with Lee Zachary back there, and I couldn't serve. I got to have my shoulder looked at. Okay, so this morning I woke up, and I rarely read the News and Observer, but I happened to see it today, and they say that this bill before you weakens the Supreme Court by requiring that constitutional challenges to law that previously go directly to the Supreme Court from Superior Court would have to first go to all 15 members of the Court of Appeals. In two different committees yesterday, we explained that that was not true and explained why it wasn't true. First of all, you couldn't do it constitutionally, and secondly, the bill doesn't do it. Now, having got that out of the way, because of that, the idea that somehow we're going to weaken the Supreme Court, let me tell you what the bill does do. I put on your desk a handout. The first thing we're going to do is help Senator Cooper get one of his former Majority Leader, Roy Cooper, get one of the bills he introduced in 1999 into law. And it was a good government bill. I've also attached to it a School of Government publication from 1997, Why the North Carolina Court of Appeals Should Have a Procedure for Sitting on Bonk. And all that means is that the 15 judges of the Court of Appeals could sit together as a court to hear or rehear a case from one of its panels. Like most other appellate courts and all of the federal appeals courts, let's take the Fourth Circuit example. There are 15 judges, but they hear cases in groups of three. Why do they do that? Well, there are thousands of cases, and they just have to divide it up. But if you lose in that three-judge court in the Fourth Circuit, instead of going to the U.S. Supreme Court, you can go and ask the entire Fourth Circuit to rehear it. Sometimes they do it, not very often. And why would you do that? Because for the U.S. Supreme Court, like for the North Carolina Supreme Court, it is very, very difficult to get your case heard because there's just not time. So it's an alternate procedure for getting your case corrected if you lose before the three-judge panel. One of the other reasons, of course, is because our court acts in groups of three. But it's not like permanent groups of three. Every week they change, and it's a different group of three. So if one of the mathematicians here could get the number of permutations and combinations for that, it's probably hundreds of groups. And you can get conflicting opinions out or decisions out of these panels, especially their unpublished opinions, and they're not supposed to overrule each other. They're not supposed to come up with different results, but they do, human nature. So this is a way to get the full court to get its panels in line. It's a good government thing, and Roy Cooper was correct. 5,000? Representative Jordan tells me that there are 3,375 different combinations there can be of that. I didn't do the math. So that's the good government part. There's some conforming changes and also a few other things in the bill. Obviously, when they do meet as a group, you have to have a quorum. The quorum would be 8, the full number of the court. And then if you go to the bottom of page 22, currently there is two ways you can get an appeal of right to the Supreme Court. One is if you present a substantial constitutional question. Well, of course, that's in the eye of the beholder. So everybody, most people who appeal to the Supreme Court says substantial constitutional question, and the Supreme Court will usually say, no, it's not, and, not take it. Or if one of the three judges dissents, then on the issue that person dissented on, you have an appeal of right to the Supreme Court. That's not taken away by this bill, but if there's a request for a petition for rehearing en banc, then your right to appeal based on a dissent is delayed until that petition is decided. But let me reiterate what I said at the beginning. The Supreme Court can always, on its own motion or on the motion of one of the parties, bypass the Court of Appeals entirely. petition for discretionary review prior to decision. It's in the rules now. It's not changed. This takes away nothing from the state Supreme Court. Okay, a couple of more good provisions. Was it the session of 2013 when the Senate continually insisted upon a three-judge panel when facial constitutional acts were challenged, a challenge based on a facial constitutional challenge? And the House didn't like it. Representative Daughtry and I, between us, stopped it four or five times, but finally they stuck it in the budget. Is that right, Representative Daughtry, Mr. Speaker? Okay, so it's there. This trims that down in two ways, and the Senate agreed to this. One, it takes away that appeal of direct appeal from the Superior Court to the Court of to the Supreme Court in those cases, which is a good thing. The Supreme Court can still reach down and get it as a discretionary matter, not taking that away, but it's not an appeal of right. The second thing it does, and this is most important for people who live outside Wake County. How many of y'all live outside Wake County? Okay, good. Most of you. So you're going to vote for this. If a case is brought in Burke County, that's, I can't remember, is that Representative Blackwell? And Rogers. I didn't realize Rogers. Rutherford and Burke. Okay. Crafty defense lawyers have figured out that the way to delay a civil case now for an extra year or two is by raising a facial state constitutional challenge. Because if they do that, it has to be transferred to Raleigh, more business for Wake County lawyers, not necessarily, but more business, to convene a three-judge court from all over the state. So just think about the scheduling problems for that with Superior Court judges who have their own calendars. They have to be summoned down here, and they only consider that one little bit of the case. It can go to the Supreme Court, come back, and then after that one part of the case is decided, then it goes back to Burke County to really try the case. That's how convoluted it is. So the final section of this part trims that way down and says that in many cases, if it's dismissible, it can go straight, instead of going to Raleigh to this special court, it can go directly to the Court of Appeals, just like any other case. So be glad to answer any questions or not. And while I'm gone, I've left you some stuff from 1661, so if you get tired, you'll have something to read while I'm gone.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Orange, Representative Meyer, arise?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to speak to the bill.
You have the floor to speak on the bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, members of the public, I would like to argue that this bill is faulty from the very first word in its title. The title claims this bill is bipartisan, when we know, in fact, that no Democrat has been consulted in the creation of this bill at any point in time, misleading the public, done by a party that has worked for years to pick their own voters through gerrymandering, through discriminatory voting restrictions that have been called restrictive on African American votes with surgical precision by our state's courts.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Craven arise?
Are we speaking on the bill or are we going off on a tangent here?
If you would, debate the bill if it's possible so that we can go home.
Mr. Speaker, this is an elections bill, and with respect to Representative Speciale, my comments are in the context of our state's elections and I will continue to speak to the bill. Thank you. The majority party has used their power in the legislature and through the State Board of Elections to override the will of voters again and again since they have been in control. They have redistricted Wake County and Guilford County as retribution for votes there that they did not like. In this bill, and the bill we passed yesterday, they are overriding the will of the voters of the entire state of North Carolina who voted for Democrat Roy Cooper in this November's elections.
If I could interrupt you, Representative Meyer, you are not debating the bill at this point. If you would stick to the bill, I think that's what is germane. I don't think it has anything to do with voters at this point. It's simply what we are doing here today in respect to this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This bill, once again, changes the process of elections in the state of North Carolina. It is done so, is doing so without deliberation from the entire state, without proper time to examine what its contents are. It is done so in a blatant political move by a party that must be afraid of the voters, so they have to hold on to the power that they have through these dramatic means. Democrats and independents in North Carolina, you need to know that the majority party has ensured that this week you have no voice in Raleigh. That they are attacking our elections with this bill, and even in the face of that, our path to fight back is through elections this year, 2017, this coming year. I know that my speech will not change any mind in this chamber today. I understand that it will make many mad. But the people need to know that free and fair elections still have a place in this state, and some of us will continue to fight for such. I will vote against this bill.
For what purpose is the gentleman from Rockingham, Representative? The gallery is welcome to hear the debate, but if you continue to clap and disrupt this proceeding, you'll be asked to leave. What purpose does the gentleman from Rockingham, Representative Jones, arise?
To debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, ladies and gentlemen of the House. I've been asked to just present Section 3 or Part 3 of this bill, which has to do with the restoring of partisan elections to the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals. There's been a lot of rhetoric during this session and during the past session when this House actually passed this bill, as many of you will recall. I'm going to try to stick with the facts for those that are interested in the facts, and people certainly can and are and will be entitled to their opinions. But I would just remind this body of what I think everyone here knows, is that for a very goodly portion of the history of the state of North Carolina, the Supreme Court and the Court of Appeals were partisan elections up until early in the last decade. And the facts will show that at that time and throughout much of North Carolina's history, North Carolina politics was dominated by one party. The Democrat Party was in the majority then and, of course, in the minority now. And at that time, the Democrats, of course, held the governorship in both houses of the legislature. But on the court, on the Supreme Court in particular, there was a Republican supermajority. And so many of the people who sent me here and many of the people around the state And I'm not here to impugn or question anyone's motives, but at the time, that particular office was made nonpartisan on the ballot. And we'll hear more rhetoric today as defending that choice. But I would just simply begin this section by saying that this is an act to restore that election process to the way that it was for much of North Carolina's history until just the past few years. And as I said, this is a bill because we have heard, anticipating the rhetoric that we will continue to hear today, that this is simply a knee-jerk reaction to the recent election for Supreme Court. And I'll address that briefly, but I just would like to remind the people of North Carolina that may be listening, and of course the members of this body know that, that this is legislation that has been taken up certainly every session that I've been here and was passed by the House during this session. What this does, ladies and gentlemen, is it, as many of the voters that I hear from in every election cycle, simply allows the voters of North Carolina to make a better informed choice. Now, we will continue to hear rhetoric today, and people will say, well, I don't think judges should be partisan. I want you to let that sink in for just a moment, and I want to ask you the question, pose you the rhetorical question, and as the gentleman said before, I'm sure my comments will not change anyone's mind in the chamber here. But is a person more or less partisan just because their party is listed on the ballot? Now, I was just kind of scrolling through Google here a few minutes ago, and I think anybody that's been paying attention to any of the news recently reported in North Carolina would have to agree that it has been a very prominent feature in the news of what the partisan makeup of the today's Supreme Court is in North Carolina, despite the fact that every one of those people were elected in a so-called nonpartisan election. Folks, we're not kidding anybody. Everybody here knows, and whether or not you choose to make your choice based on that partisan label is not really the issue here. Quite frankly, I have cast votes before in elections, partisan and nonpartisan, that I didn't necessarily vote for the person of my party because there are other extenuating circumstances, and they have been brought up and they should be brought up. You should be concerned about the person's character and their experience and other things. But most of us believe that political parties in this state indeed do have a role. One of the roles of a political party is to vet candidates through a primary. We have had judicial races where we have had as many as 19 people on the ballot. And a person could win a race with relatively few votes throughout this state, nothing even close to resembling a majority. Is that good government? I would say no. I would say one of the proper roles of political parties is to vet candidates so that you don't have 19 candidates running in a general election. So that in itself is a very good reason to put a partisan label on the Supreme Court election. I would point out in this most recent Supreme Court election what I think is a very compelling argument as well. And that is that about 480,000 voters in this state, just about 1 in 9 voters, chose not to cast a vote for the Supreme Court that did vote for the Court of Appeals. They voted for the lower court, but they skipped over the ballot for the Supreme Court, the highest court in the state. And one can only believe that they did so because they didn't know who they wanted to vote for. And you can say, well, the voters, they should do their homework, and they should know this, and they should know that. There were a lot of people on that ballot. And maybe some of you would make the argument that all elections should be nonpartisan, that we should run for the legislature, and the governor should run, and the president should run, and that we just should do away with political parties on the ballot. And I think most people here recognize that that would not be a good thing to do. And so I would just point out to you that there are very good reasons
why we believe that restoring the political party being listed on the ballot is a good thing. We don't want to disenfranchise the voters of North Carolina. We don't want to withhold information that they might believe is important, and information that is routinely provided on the ballot, and that is the political party. And I will give you my answer. Is a person more or less partisan just because their party is listed on the ballot? And the answer is no. A person is partisan. A person holds their views consistent with the political party that they're registered with, some more than others, some more blatantly partisan. That's part of the things that people have to hash out when they're making their decision. But to simply oppose giving the people of North Carolina more information on the ballot and putting that party label there so that people know that and they can choose whether they want to use it or not, to want to withhold that from them, perhaps because you think it benefits your side greater to do that, I have a difficult time understanding that. And so I hope that, and I know that we'll have the debate and so forth, look forward to it, but I hope that you will support this bill, and I hope that you will support Part 3.
Mr. Speaker, over here.
For what purpose? Is the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, arise?
To ask Representative Jones a question, if I may.
Do you yield?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Jones, I ask this question with all respect to it. It's something that has puzzled me, and I know a lot of people in the state, and it's both parties. And that question is, when you say this is not in response to an election, with something so complicated as this ongoing changes in our Ethics Commission and our Elections Commission, why could this not wait for the full session that we are about to go into in less than 45 days? Why could it not wait till then to be vetted through numerous committees, to have a task force or commission appointed or a committee in the House appointed, like we did with our election law reform that Representative Lewis led on redistricting? And we've always done that. This is a far-reaching, impacting change that we're voting on here today. And you know, there may be things in here that some of us agree with, but numerous questions are coming into all of us. So I ask the question, why could this not wait for its due full process next session if it is not in reaction to this election? And I ask that with all sincerity.
Thank you for your question, Representative. I would start by saying that there's probably no better time to deal with it than the present. I would be the first one to say that many of these issues, in my opinion, could have and should have been dealt with in the past. I'm finishing the third term in the legislature myself, and I will just tell you that the 6 years that I've been here, I've worked very hard on this particular portion of the bill that I have just presented to you. And quite frankly, in my humble opinion, is something that we should have done a long time ago. And it has been properly vetted. This has been through committees over the past years. And as I said, this particular portion of the bill, the House voted for this back earlier this year. And so I believe that there is no better time than the present. And quite frankly, right now, there is no election in progress. Okay, we have an incoming Republican supermajority in the House and the Senate. We have an incoming Democratic governor. We have incoming Council of State members from both parties. And I think there is no better time to deal with some of these election issues than the present. Should we have dealt with them in the past? In my opinion, yes. But we are here today, and we have the opportunity to do it before we start another election cycle, and we're in the middle of that, and then people can question the motives, you know, based on who's on the ballot and what's up and all this. I suggest that we take care of it now while we're here today.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, arise?
Send forward an amendment.
The gentleman has the floor to send forth an amendment.
Representative Lewis moves to amend the bill on page 10, lines 9 through 13, by rewriting the lines to read.
You have the floor to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Members, I know this amendment is only now appearing on your dashboard, so I'll talk even slower than I normally talk. If you will look at the amendment, you will notice on lines 2 and 3, this makes a conforming change. It was always the intent of the bill sponsors that new county board of elections members would be named in 2017. The bill, as printed, pushes that date out beyond that point, and this is truly a clarifying amendment. So I'll be happy to answer any questions on it.
Does anyone want to debate the amendment?
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Floyd, for what purpose do you arise?
I'm having a problem seeing the amendment.
Mr. Speaker, I believe the amendment that came up is a different date change. It's on page 10, lines 9 through 13. It's the amendment that showed up on the dashboard. If it's helpful, Mr. Little Chair, it's S4ALU-1, version 2.
Mr. Speaker, is it possible we can displace this item until we can all see it and get straight what
is correct? The amendment is displaced. Representative Lewis, do you want to continue to have the floor?
Mr. Speaker, may I speak on the bill, and we'll get any technical issues with the technical amendment revised the next time I speak. May I speak on the bill?
You have the floor to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, I'm going to speak to you on sections 1, sections 2, and section 5 of this bill. I want to start, of course, with section 1 because I'm very proud of this section. We have been told that one of the most important things is for our citizenry to have confidence and faith that the election process is fair and that it is overseen in a way that does not reflect the partisan bend, if you will, of those administering the election, but in fact the true will of the voters and largely just the interpretation of the law. What Part 1 does is it creates the bipartisan, and let me define that because we have some members who seem to not understand the word bipartisan. So when this bill talks about bipartisan, what it means is that there are two parties equally involved in comprising this board. There are four Democrats and four Republicans. That's two parties. That's bipartisan, which is why the bill includes the word bipartisan in the title. What this would do is create the State Board of Elections and Ethics Enforcement. It would be an 8-member board. There would be 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans. 4 people would be named by the governor and 4 by the legislature. Of those, the governor would appoint 2 that were not of the party of he or her, and the legislature would have to name 2 of its 4 that were not the party of the president pro tem or the speaker. 4 Democrats, 4 Republicans, bipartisan. It would transfer the responsibilities
of overseeing the elections, but does not change any other process in terms of how the elections are administered. It would, beginning in October, and I want to point this out because this is different than when it was in the Senate. We received a request from the Secretary of State, the Honorable Elaine Marshall, who asked us to delay the transfer of the lobbying regulation and administration until October 1st. We have acquiesced to her request, and that is reflected in this bill. So beginning on October 1st, this board would also oversee the monitoring of lobbying. The bill further, and we'll get into the technical part of this amendment, the intent of this bill is to also make our county boards nonpartisan, or more correctly, bipartisan. As you know now, the one party will have two seats and the other party will have one. Under this plan, both parties will have two. So if both parties have two, that's equal representation. That's bipartisan. Again, we'll define that definition. All the other rules, all the other regulations that are in current statute that govern how elections are run, that govern how ethics opinions are reviewed and issued, are transferred in their entirety in this bill. So there's no need to look for the hidden dagger in this, because the process of filing for office and the conduction of the elections, the process for seeking advice and rulings from the Ethics Commission, all that stays the same, is transferred in its entirety to this new board of four Democrats and four Republicans, four appointed by the state's chief executive, four appointed by the state's legislative branch. I, of course, will be glad to answer questions about that. If I may, I'll continue on to part two of this bill. Part two is simply clarifying language. Part two clarifies that it is the legislature that has authority.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose is the lady from Franklin, Representative Richardson, rise?
To ask the question of the Speaker, of the bill's presenter.
Do you yield for a question at this time?
Mr. Speaker, I will yield to all questions, but because this counts against my time, if the lady would be kind enough to let me complete my remarks, I will yield to her at that time.
He does not yield at this time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, part two of this bill would provide that it is the legislature that has authority to draw legislative districts. It would provide that there is no other entity in this state that has the authority to do that. Part five of this bill, the last part of this bill, deals with changes to the Industrial Commission. What you will find, if you will look with me, beginning on page 24, you will find that we are changing and providing the ability for an individual whose name to fill a vacant term to be able to fill the remaining time of a vacant term and serve the full term that they would have been granted. We're also making a change on page 25, which specifies that on or before December 30th, 2016, and then every 4 years thereafter, the governor would designate a chairman of this board, and that chairman would serve a term of 4 years. We also further go down and define that on or before December 30th of 2016 and every 4 years thereafter, the governor would also appoint the vice chairman. Please know that it is my intent, as someone who has promoted the concept of a bipartisan board to review and manage our elections and ethics process. This is a quasi-judicial function. It should be fair. It should be balanced. I have, and many members in this chamber recall, because they've had to listen to this, my friend from Mecklenburg was talking about things that have gone on in the past. I have talked about this idea since 2011. So you say, why now? Which is a very legitimate question. If you're going to make a change with something that deals with the administration of elections, it makes sense to do it at a time when there's not an election currently underway. There really is only a few month window of any 2 year period where there's not an election underway. So the answer to why now is that there is no election currently underway. The State Board of Elections business will essentially be finished by December 31st, and the time to transfer to a bipartisan board of 4 Democrats and 4 Republicans, 2 parties, bipartisan, is right. I would urge your support of this bill. I would urge you to carefully consider the sum of the whole and understand that this is a positive step forward in improving election and ethics enforcement. Thank you. I urge you to support the bill. And, Mr. Speaker, I will yield to any questions.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Richardson, arise?
Debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
Mr. Speaker, members of the House, there are 3 institutions that I hold very dearly to my heart. One is my church. The other is this wonderful body, the way it works magic with the diversity and the good people that serve here. And the third is the court. Our court system is the greatest system of justice known to mankind. Our judges, when they first take office, take this oath. I do solemnly swear that I will administer justice without favoritism to anyone or to the state, that I will not knowingly take directly or indirectly any fee, gift, gratuity, or reward whatsoever for any matter or thing done by me or to be done by me by virtue of my office, except the salary and allowances by law provided, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge the duties of my office. The very oath they take is in direct contradiction to a partisan election. Most states in this country see that. An overview of what happens in the rest of the country is only 7 states elect their Supreme Court by partisan election. 16 do it by nonpartisan. 2 do it by legislative elections. 4 do it by government gubernatorial appointment. 24 do it by merit selection. The overwhelming majority have taken judges out of the elected process completely. They should be taken out of the elected process completely. It is impossible for them to do that oath and run for office, because they have to get money to run for office. And where do they get that money? They get it from the very lawyers that practice in front of them. That's one of the sources. There are several comments. Your colleague-to-be, Judge Joe John, has stated and gotten out of the judiciary because he said, and I quote, "The high standards required by these duties, while attending to the time-consuming demands of a political campaign, are impossible." we should have the best and the brightest legal minds, such as Representative Stamm. He would be an outstanding judge, selected by the peers and by the legislature, and affirmed by the legislature, to serve in that distinguished body. It is absolutely imperative that we get judges out of the elected process. Last night at the committee meeting, and I want you all to understand this, we discussed this thing for an hour, and everybody went round and round in a circle over this, and no less than four people, not myself included, people like Representative Lewis, like Representative Stamm, were saying to themselves, we would love to have merit selection if we could only figure it out. Well, let's figure it out. Representative Daughtry, Mr. Speaker, when you were here in 95, you sponsored a bill for merit selection. I broke ranks with my Democrats to go along with you on that. It was an outstanding bill. We missed it by one vote. We should do merit selection. Your party was right when you brought that before this body in 95. Representative Stamm has worked on it years ago. He was right when he did it. Representative Lewis is right to want to do it. It is long overdue. Let's move this portion of this bill out, or section out of this bill. Let's take this thing up in the next session, and let's do it right. Let's go to merit selection.
Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the lady from Surrey, Representative Stevens, run?
I would like to ask Representative Richardson a question if he'd yield.
Will you yield?
Sure.
He yields.
Thank you. Representative Richardson, I'm on the Courts Commission and also on the Chief Justice's Commission, and that is very much an issue we would like to raise and happy to deal with you. In the meantime, we just believe this is something that the will at least give people something about the judge. But are you more than willing to help us work with that constitutional amendment to change the voter process? Because, of course, it'll have to take a constitutional amendment, but you're willing to get on board with us and work with that the next year?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Layman, arise?
Debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm going to speak primarily to the Court of Appeals changes that are addressed in this bill. It's an area that I have had a lot of experience. And I want to say, just since yesterday afternoon, I reached out and spoke to a judge on the Court of Appeals, the Clerk of Court for the Court of Appeals, the North Carolina Bar Association, the Solicitor General of the State of North Carolina, and I checked with the Appellate Rules Committee, which is a committee composed of primarily of lawyers who practice before the appellate courts. And I want to tell you that not one of those entities asked for or pushed for this bill in any way. And to my knowledge, none of the entities were consulted about this bill. Now, it shouldn't be for me as an individual junior member of this chamber to reach out and check with all these stakeholders about an important provision in a pending bill. It should have been the sponsors, people who are drafting the bill. That is the way legislation should be made. You bring in stakeholders. You check with people who have knowledge and experience in these areas. I will be the first to concede that there is a reasonable argument. There are arguments on both sides about on-bank procedures for the Court of Appeals. But that's not the point. The point is, when we make changes, we should do it in a deliberate manner. We should consult with people who've got a stake in the game and move deliberately in that process. And you've heard from this side before, it's the same objection we've had to this session, we've had to do it to other bills. It's the manner in which these measures have been undertaken. Yes, there is substance in these bills that are positive, that may be good government, and yes, we acknowledge that many of the members have good motivations to make these changes, but the problem is this is not the way you make legislation. There are members of the public you continue to hear from who say, we have been excluded. We have not got any notice of these bills. We've got no opportunity to participate. And again, it's not only the public, it's people who are directly impacted by these bills. When I got home last night and turned on the news, this chamber was on national news. and it was not positive coverage. This morning, there are numerous news articles and editorials talking about issues like abuse of power, trying to change the effects of the election. These are not positive stories. And members of this chamber, please, we ought to be concerned about the respect and trust that we have among the public. And it is not, we're not going to get those things by proceeding in the manner that we have done in the last couple of days. And, you know, I realize you think, well, we're doing the right thing, but the haste of all this, even if it's a matter of appearance, appearances matter. I've only been here for a short time, but I care very much about the trust and integrity of this chamber, and I wish all the members would take that into consideration in voting on these on these bills. We can take these measures up when we have time, when we can hear from people, and let's do that when the session starts in January. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Catawba arise, Representative?
Can I ask a question of the representative?
Representative Layman, will you yield to a question?
I finished speaking, but I will yield, yes.
What source in the media are you speaking of?
When I got home, it was late.
If we could,
Mr. Speaker, I can help answer that question.
You're not recognized at this time. If you would have a seat, what we'd like to do is keep this debate as much as we can on the bill, not on the press. For what purpose is the lady from Wake, Representative Alvarez?
Listen, Speaker, I would like to be recognized to ask my question that Representative Lewis said he would answer after he finished his presentation of the bill.
Representative Lewis, will you arise to answer a question?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I yield.
Thank you, Representative Lewis, and thank you for that wonderful interpretation of this bill to last night and today. I think we clearly understand the purpose of this bill, but in discussing this bill and debating this bill, several times we talked about wanting the public to be informed, for example, making our judicial system appear as an R&D system so that people would know who they are voting for. We also talked about the fact that we want to have our citizens informed, and yet we had people voting in 2016 that had no clue that these changes were coming about. And I understand that you feel strongly and your fellow members feel strongly that these changes need to be made. But could we not make these changes now and make them effective as of the 2020 election so that the voters would be well informed as to how their vote would count and what the process would be once they chose their candidate of choice to serve them in this state?
Well, thank you for the question. A couple of responses. Again, I don't truly understand what the reason we're proposing this change now. There's not an election currently underway. The making the effective date of 2020 would be an attempt to bind action in the future general assemblies, which is not something we can do. And I keep hearing a recurring theme that the voters voted for. I think we all, of course, serve the voters. We work for the people of North Carolina. This bill in no way infringes upon that. So I don't, I'm sorry if I'm just not understanding the gist of your question, but it appears to me that we have presented, I've tried to outline how this creates a better process. I think the voters do vote for things to get better. And I think this is a better process than what we have now.
Follow up.
Do you yield for another question?
Yes, sir.
He yields.
My question was not about the process. My question was about what is the problem with putting this forward for the 2020 election. And also, when we emphasize that the it's two-part, I'm sorry, when we emphasize that the governor still has the power to appoint, it seems that the person who is presenting the bill failed to say, but after the Senate confirms that person, will only that person then be seated. So I still wonder why, if we are so concerned about having informed voters, and our voters were not informed about this new process for the incoming governor or the re-elected state of Secretary of State, could we not put these procedures in place and have them effective as of 2020? And I'm new here, but I do believe in our budget we did legislate pre-years on the opportunity scholarship. If I'm wrong, I do apologize to this body for misinterpreting that.
Well, thank you for that question. I would respond as follows. Number one, I believe that the time is right to make this change. If the lady is so inclined, of course, it is your right to offer an amendment to change the effective date. I would not support that, but it's your right to offer that. If you want to engage in this process. And just to be clear, to the best of my knowledge, the issue we discussed about confirmation of the governor's cabinet, which the Constitution prescribed, was in the bill yesterday. I don't believe it's in this bill. So nothing has changed in this bill in that regard. So I don't think that question is actually before the body at this time.
Thank you.
I think the amendment that you did not run before is now ready to be run. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
You recognize to send forth an amendment. Amendment number one is back before the body.
Members, thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker and members, I began my remarks a while ago by referring to the amendment. I should have referred to the bill. I was in error. The amendment amends the bill on page 10, lines 9 through 13, by inserting language that makes clear that county boards of elections would be named in 2017. Makes clear that that is done. So that's all the amendment does. It is the way I have explained the bill, but it did not reflect in the language. I'll be glad to answer any questions. This is truly a technical amendment.
Are there any questions regarding the amendment? If so, please stand to be recognized. If not, all those in favor of the amendment sent forth by Representative Lewis will vote aye, and all opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. Clerk will close the box and record the vote. 60 having voted in affirmative, 27 in the negative. Mr. Lewis's amendment has passed its second reading.
Mr. Speaker.
And we're now back on the bill.
Mr. Speaker, Representative Stevens over here. I was walking around the room and just didn't get back to my seat in time. Can I be registered as voting yes?
The lady will be recorded as voting aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir.
I was in the chamber before you called to end that vote.
Would like to be recorded as an aye.
Representative Speciale would be recorded as voting aye.
Mr. Speaker, I had 1 foot in the door when you closed the
Representative Davis like had 1 foot in the door. He'll be recorded as voting aye.
Thank you, sir.
For what purpose does, before we go any further, Representative Pendleton has set forth an amendment. The chair has reviewed the amendment and the chair rules it out of order. For what purpose does the lady from Wake, Representative Avila, arise?
To ask the bill sponsor a question.
The gentleman yield to a question.
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I yield.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Lewis, in many cases where we set up boards or commissions or bodies that will deliberate to establish rules and to settle disagreements, they're odd numbers. And I'm interested with the state board and the county boards where you've put an even number here. Could you explain the rationale behind that?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for the question. The idea behind an even number is that's the way you get an even number. That makes it a truly bipartisan effort. If you have the same number of Democrats and the same number of Republicans, that makes it a bipartisan effort. That's the definition, as I said earlier, of bipartisan. So the idea being, if a question is important enough for these quasi-judicial entities to act, there ought to be the ability to get some concurrence with people of the other political party to say in these quasi-judicial roles that this is important enough to act. So that's why we went with an even number for the board.
Thank you.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin, arise?
To debate the bill.
You have the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to respond to some of the comments made by the gentleman from Rockingham and the gentleman from Harnett. Now, our rules of procedure and of civility do require us to address each other, I think, as gentleman and lady, whether the person in question is or isn't. I have the joy in this case, though, that both of the gentlemen to whom I'm responding are, in fact, gentlemen. The fact that they are usually wrong does not in any way make their condition any less gentle. And I shall now proceed to point out the ways in which, some of the ways in which they are wrong. The gentleman from Harnett suggests that perhaps we don't know the meaning of the word bipartisan. Having already, in my short speech, dropped a Shakespearean reference, I'll now drop a little bit cliched Princess Bride references. You keep using that word, David, bipartisan. I do not think it means what you think it does. I did look it up. And at least one definition on the internet, which is always correct about all things, defines bipartisan as of or involving the agreement or cooperation of two political parties that usually oppose each other's policies. Nothing in the process of this bill, and I think once you scratch beneath the actual substance of this bill, is under that definition of bipartisan in any way, shape, or form living up to that definition. The process on the Board of Elections is carefully calculated to ensure that in the key years there will be a Republican chair. Had we gotten together in a bipartisan fashion and over time and through a deliberative process, crafted a process, perhaps we could have come up with a new structure for our Boards of Elections that actually was bipartisan and did not give an advantage to one party or the other. What that structure looks like, I do not know. But I do think that in a bipartisan process, over time, with deliberation and considerable input from the public and from the local and state boards of elections, we might be able to craft a solution. However, I don't think that we will ever know. One deep concern I have about the effects of this bill on how we will conduct our elections relates to how the previous election was conducted. We found this election, as we have seen in previous cycles, that many North Carolinians of all parties do like to take advantage of multi-site early voting. We do have a pretty difficult process by which multi-site early voting sites are created. Right now, as I understand the process, and I stand to be corrected by those who know more, that in order to get such a multi-site plan approved at the local level, it requires a unanimous vote of the county board of election. If they're unable to get that, it can then go to the state board of election, which can then adopt it. If this process in the bill before you now is adopted, it's going to be much harder to get such a plan approved, because the way it reads in the bill now, a majority on the Board of Elections, I believe, says it takes at least 8 of the 12. So what happens now is a process that enables more North Carolinians to vote because it's more convenient to them to have sites scattered throughout the county. It's going to be much harder to get such a plan approved. I do not know if that is a bug in this plan or if that is actually a intended feature by the bill drafters. Either way, I don't think it's good for the people of North Carolina, of all parties, who want to vote. Let me turn now to the arguments made by the gentleman from Rockingham. And he and I have discussed this on the floor and off, and it comes time to do it again. I think the essence of his rhetoric, though, is that partisan affiliation gives more information to the voters and enables them to make a decision on which judge to vote for. He actually used the term that if we don't have it on there, we're somehow withholding information from the voters. Of course, that's not accurate, because any voter, at a minimum, can go to the State Board of Elections website and search the candidate's name and easily find out what partisan affiliation they are. Of course, I think when they show up at the polls, they're going to have representatives of my party, the Democratic Party, and your party, the Republican Party, there with lists of judges who to vote for. That is, for better or for worse, part of our system. So the information is there. Nothing is being withheld from the voters. One fact that the gentleman from Rockingham did say, though, is that we here do think that partisan affiliation is important. Well, of course it is. To 119 of us right now, we all have a partisan affiliation, and for the General Assembly, that is generally how you get elected. The gentleman from Rockingham was at one time an unaffiliated, as is the gentleman from wherever the heck Paul Tyne is from. I can't remember. Hyde, I think. But for the most part, we are partisan here. But I think if we get outside of our partisan bubble and ask the voters what they want in their judges, voter, Democrat or Republican, do you want your judges to be more partisan or less partisan? I think resoundingly we will get an answer that we want our judges to be less partisan. And so by putting a partisan affiliation on the ballot, we are setting up a system that is designed to elect more Democrats who are partisan and more Republicans who are partisan. Now, I will never say that there is absolutely no relevance of one's partisan affiliation to how he or she might preside as a judge. It is of some relevance. However, I would argue that there are a dozen, perhaps 100 more relevant facts. Where do they go to law school? How long have they practiced law? Where have they practiced law? At what levels? Do they have any other experience as a judge? What was their law school GPA? If you want to keep me from ever being a judge, put that information on the ballot. I would argue that all those things are more relevant to one's qualification as a judge than their partisan affiliation. So if we're going to put information about judges on the ballots, let's look at putting some of those things on there. Or, again, we could just leave it to the voter to do their job. Or, as Representative Stevens and Representative Richardson have said, let's work together in a bipartisan fashion to find a better way. Finally, I do want to turn, just because this is his last session, to my friend from Wake, Representative Stamm, who has epitomized the exchange of ideas that I think upholds the finest traditions of this body. Much like the gentleman from Harnett and the gentleman from Rockingham, my friend from Wake, Representative Stamm, is also usually wrong, but he goes about his wrongness in the most dignified fashion. We worry about what we're going to do about the environment in our state. I would argue that we can take no greater step towards preserving our state's forests than getting Representative Stamm out of the General Assembly so we don't kill any more trees. He makes many good arguments, I think, in favor of an en banc process and setup for our Court of Appeals. There are arguments for and arguments against that. As Representative Stamm has pointed out, those arguments have been made in this body long before I ever got here. But it is a change that goes to the heart of one of the key branches of our government, and it should not be made lightly, and it should not be quickly. be made quickly. It is something that we should postpone to the long session and take a careful look at it and see what we can do. In the end, though, the changes in this bill and in the other legislation that we're passing now show a lack of understanding of history. Folks, there are many people in my party that well into the election cycle in 2010 thought that Democrats were ready to reign for another century. How far off were we from the truth? I am concerned, given the tenor of legislation before us now, that there are those in your party that think the Republicans are set up to govern for a century. Folks, if there's anything any of us should learn from the candidacy of Donald Trump, of Bernie Sanders, and so many other things, is that the public is sick of both our parties and is not going to give either one of our parties the chance to govern for very long. In recognition of that fact, let's sit together in a bipartisan way over time in a deliberative process that involves the agreement and cooperation of two political parties and come up with a system that best serves the public regardless of which party is in control.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Stanley, Representative Burr, arise?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to speak on the bill, please.
Would you have that gentleman taken out of the... The galleries will be closed and locked, and we will stand at ease.
The guests in the gallery are reminded that the House is in session right now and the people elected us to be here. You are interfering with the duties of this House. The Sergeant at Arms will clear the folks disrupting the session.
Come on.
What purpose does the gentleman from Stanley, Representative Burr, rise?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to speak on the bill, please, Mr. Speaker.
And the House is no longer at ease. The House is back in session. The gentleman is recognized to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I hope that doesn't count against my time.
It does not.
Thank you. I would like to speak to you today about Part 3 of this bill. We've listened to the Democrats object to partisan elections for judicial races because they claim that justices and judges shouldn't be selected based on their party affiliation, but their own record doesn't match up with the rhetoric that we've heard from them today on this matter, the matter of judicial races being partisan. It is clear that the Democrats' efforts to remove the judicial candidate's party affiliation nearly 10 years ago wasn't an attempt to keep the courts from being partisan, but it was the real strategy to make it hard, to make it difficult for voters to receive critical information that they rely on when they go to the polls to vote. It is clear that the Democrats aren't interested in nonpartisan races or picking the best and most qualified jurist for the seat. They really want a Democrat, and that's fine. And the Democrat Party and its elected officials here know that the chances of electing a Democrat judge are increased if the voters are not provided with the information on the ballot.
Speaker, excuse me, for what purpose the gentleman from Stanley would suspend? For what purpose does the gentleman from Rockingham, Representative Jones, rise?
Mr. Speaker, I just want to note that I'm having a difficult time following the speaker because of the disturbance in the chamber.
The chair is noting that as well and would encourage the members to try to listen, but the chair acknowledges and notes for the record the disturbance which continues by a number of folks. The chair has asked the sergeant-at-arms who are working with law enforcement presently to deal with those individuals who are disrupting the session. But the chair also believes that we should try to proceed forward with the people's business as much as we can. The gentleman from Stanley continues to have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I will repeat, I believe that the Democratic Party and its elected officials here know that the chances of electing a Democrat judge are increased if their party affiliation is hidden from the average voters. That is why they have opposed partisan elections for judges. So even though we've heard from Democrats in this chamber that they object to partisan judicial races, last night after we left the elections committee, I went home and went to the apartment and back to the office both and spent a little bit of time doing some research. And a simple search online shows clearly that the Democratic Party fully supports electing judicial candidates based on their political affiliation. And I'll show you here. I've got a couple examples. Here's the Democrat voter guide from Guilford County. It has all of the candidates listed, goes all the way down to their district court seats, includes a list of all the Democrat candidates running for Supreme Court, Court of Appeals, and District Court. I found another county, Durham County. We had several members from Durham who were objecting in the elections committee last night to partisan elections and so forth. So found on the Democratic Party website in Durham that they have what they call a blue card. And it lists all of their Democrat candidates all the way down Supreme Court.
Just a moment, the gentleman from Stanley would suspend. Would the gentleman from Cumberland, Representative Floyd, please, for what purpose does the gentleman rise?
We want to know who is running this bill.
The bill sponsor of this matter, I believe, is Representative Lewis. It's a Senate bill, but it's being carried by Representative Lewis.
Representative Lewis, yield for a question.
Representative Lewis does not have the floor. The gentleman from Stanley has the floor. Once the gentleman from Stanley yields the floor, then the gentleman would be recognized to tender a question to another member.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Yes, sir. The gentleman from Stanley continues to have the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Again, I'll state that a search of the Durham County Democrat Party website was able to find their blue card where they list all their candidates down to the Supreme Court, their Democrat candidate, and even goes down to district court where they say that they don't take the position that of who's the best jurist. They say that both are Democrats, so they take no position. You can vote for either one. nothing based on their qualification. The Durham County Democrat Party website even goes so far, they have another attachment on there that talks about why judges matter. And it says, how do you judge a judge when you're going to the polls? And it goes through a list of five things as to how you decide what their judges are. And I can tell you that they list the political party affiliation ahead of where they list their basic qualifications and how they actually make decisions. So there's the priority from the Democratic Party of Durham County. It's not based on who is the most qualified. It's based on their political affiliation. Again, here's another example. Orange County Democratic Party endorsed Morgan. Not the best candidate, the most qualified jurist. The next two words are a Democrat. Nothing about qualifications, simply about his political affiliation. So it's pretty clear from that. Matter of fact, you can go to their own Democrat candidate for Supreme Court in this election, and you can go back to October 26th and on his website, his Facebook post as well, he has a picture of the box for the Supreme Court election. And he says, please note, pay close attention to Judge Morgan's name placement on the ballot. Judges' races are nonpartisan. There will be no party affiliation, Democrat or Republican, listed on the ballot for the North Carolina Supreme Court Associate Justice candidates. And then in all caps, Judge Morgan is the only registered Democrat on the statewide ballot whose name is listed first in this position. For all other statewide positions, the Democratic candidate are listed second. On his own Facebook page, he's admitting he's the Democrat candidate, he's their choice, and he's wanting to make sure that all his Democrat voters know that he's the Democratic candidate. They want them to be educated on that fact, which is certainly their right. But it is also the right, in my opinion, of all voters to know who the Democrat and Republican candidates are. Again, it's clear from these voter guides that I mentioned and from many, many others that are found online that the Democratic Party isn't opposed to making judicial races as partisan, just not on the actual ballot. That's the important key part there. They only want their Democrat Party activists who vote straight Democrat to know who they are. They don't want the average voter who goes to the poll to know, which is why we see such a drop-off in folks that actually cast a ballot on those nonpartisan judicial races because they're unsure of which candidate is which. So I think that this is purely politics from the other side. They know that North Carolina voters tend to elect more conservative, more Republican judges. They trust them. That's why they had to change the law. And I think by changing this back and making it clear where they stand, it is better for the voters to have all of that information. And clearly, they support it as well, just not on the ballot. But today, we can fix that, and I certainly would encourage you to vote for the bill. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Scrow, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
I know that our reading clerk does a wonderful job, but sometimes we move a little bit quickly through the titles of these bills that display what the intent is. So I just want to dwell on that for a minute. We have before us a bill that would alter the way that elections, campaign finance, lobbying, and ethics are regulated in the state of North Carolina, and the appellate court is structured, and restore partisan elections, and change the terms for the Industrial Commission in one bill, in one special session. I have heard folks on the other side of the aisle be coy about the motivation for being here. And while the content of this legislation and other legislation is certainly not transparent, displayed right now by the fact that we're here alone in this gallery, the intent is entirely transparent to every major paper in the state of North Carolina, to the people of North Carolina. The intent is a partisan coup of the state of North Carolina to overturn the will of the people of this great state. None of us should stand for it. It is shameful that we have an omnibus piece of legislation costing the taxpayers of North Carolina $42,000 a day so that we can embark on this coup. And I will not stand with you as you embark on a coup.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wayne, Representative Elrise?
I'm having a hard time hearing Representative Scrow with the disturbance outside, and I believe he deserves the respect of every other member of this chamber to have his voice heard.
Thank you. The chair does note that there does continue to be a disturbance outside. For what purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Arprise?
To speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Ladies and gentlemen, colleagues, continue to hear that this issue is not properly before us, so that we shouldn't take up these weighty matters. Indeed, my friends and colleagues in the Democratic Party, your own minority leader, filed a bill in the hurricane session to undertake election matters, things of time and early voting and nonpartisan district for redrawing the district lines. I will tell you right now, we are facing early in the next session a court order to redraw lines. I can't tell you how urgent it is for us outside of elections to understand and create the system that we must all participate in early elections next year. If not now, when? I've heard them talk about, well, we need to delay the time. I would sincerely ask, do you think we need to delay the time for early voting to take effect? That was filed by your own minority leader. Maybe we should delay the time to study and not cut short the elected terms of members who are properly seated in this General Assembly for next session and cut the will of the voters short in that fashion. But I will tell you this, in matters of clarifying the appeals process, my goodness, who doesn't expect that the courts would be a part of this whole thing coming forward? You've even said as such. And so the timing is absolutely critical and necessary. While I understand you agree with the difference in the policy of what we're doing, I certainly understand that. In fact, you have articulated very cogently a defense to these various policies that we're undertaking. And in fact, Representative Lehman has said he has time to contact various groups of people and chide us about us not contacting the people he has. We've debated the policy issues, but one thing we must truly come to agree with is that the timing of deferring these confirmations of the new governor to talk about the election procedures is not in the heat of the battle. And so we truly agree with ourselves.
Mr. Speaker, for what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Dollarise?
Mr. Speaker, I would just like to note for the record, I have my hearing aids in. I've turned them up as loud as I can. But the noise from outside this gallery is keeping me from being able to effectively hear Representative Arp's remarks.
The chair notes that. The chair also hears the disruption. It's unfortunate that there are folks who want to do that. But we saw it yesterday. We saw it again today. We're hearing it right now outside the House floor. The gentleman does have the floor to continue debating, but I'm told the legislative police are dealing with this, as well as our sergeant arms staff. The gentleman has the floor to continue debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And I've never been guilty of talking softly either. So, but what we see here is an interest by both parties to file bills regarding election matters, and that's what's happened. We've gone through the process of debate, the normal process. Every member had an opportunity to file bills. But we all must agree the timely nature with which these matters that are in these bills that is before us is properly done now before the heat of election that must take place within a few short weeks. I would submit to you that you must certainly be able to disagree on policy, but not on the timing. You have admitted about the timing to for the enactment of these things, I would submit to you there's no greater import than to consider these matters before they occur in the public. What greater harm could happen than trying to change the rules during the middle of an election process? That's been the problem. People need certainty with what the ethics will be, the makeup of any review. All of these matters regarding this are extremely important to the soon coming election process. And with that, I believe that these are well-reasoned changes to clarify and make certain for our voters on what is forthcoming soon. Thank you, and I encourage you to vote yes on the bill.
What purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Dollar, rise?
To debate the motion.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. I just want to make an observation, particularly based on the debate by some of the colleagues there on the back row, where I used to sit for about 6 years. You know, this is majority rule. It's not mob rule. It's not who can generate the most emails and sing the loudest songs. This is majority rule. We have elections. Elections have consequences. Elections provided us a new governor. But those same elections, that same electorate, provided supermajorities the same as in this current session.
Mr. Speaker.
This is not, I do not yield, this is not a lame duck session. This is pretty representative of the breakdown that this chamber is going to have when it comes back in January. Those individuals who have discussed bills in this session yesterday and today have amply pointed out the need to act now, the rationale, which I think is very sound rationale, to move now, as has been pointed out with respect to elections. I thought the gentleman from Stanley made exceptionally good points. I mean, you have to wonder. The suggestion that was made that if someone running under a partisan label is going to be tainted in their decisions, does that mean that the Democratic Party is admitting that for decades, when all of their judges ran as Democrats on the superior court level, not simply appellate level, that all of their decisions should be taken as being tainted during that period of time? I wouldn't think they would accept that as a rationale.
Mr. Speaker.
What purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Hastings, rise?
May I be recognized for a question or privilege, sir?
The gentleman actually may not interrupt another speaker as to a question of privilege because the gentleman. I think, does the gentleman is recognized to a question of privilege relevant to the debate at hand.
Respectfully to the member from Wake County, I could not hear him for the noise outside, and that's the reason I raised a question of privilege. I apologize.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you noting it. He said he'd be glad to start from the beginning, too, if you'd like. The gentleman from Wake has the floor to continue his debate.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, I take, frankly, great exception to some of the characterizations of the debate and our purposes here today. I take exceptional umbrance to that. Folks were talking about, well, how procedurally did this bill move forward? Hey, look, I've been here a while. We had budgets. We had conference reports. We had all kinds of legislation that would hit this floor at different times and different sessions that none of us in the minority party had any clue. In fact, in many cases, a number of the folks in the majority party had no clue what was in those bills. I think all of these proposals, and I listened carefully and read carefully to the bills that have been presented, and certainly to the bill presented today, and Representative Lewis is correct, and I would strongly disagree with Representative Martin. I think that Representative Lewis is correct at least two-thirds of the time, if not closer to three-quarters, 90-some percent most of the time. I think he's pretty on target. And he is certainly factually correct in saying that the bulk of this bill, in terms of bringing together campaign reporting and finance, ethics, which should go hand in hand with what we're doing with our Board of Elections, and lobbying, is an issue that has been out there for many, many years. There's nothing new about this. Whether the questions, as has been mentioned, about whether to use labels or not in elections, again, this is a decades-old issue. It's not particularly new territory. But I'll also point out something else, since it's sort of been raised and been thrown out there. I would just point out this, that Republicans have amply demonstrated their ability to look beyond any sort of party label. And you have no better example than over the last several weeks when the incumbent Republican governor and others in support of him raised countless election challenges all across this state, in counties across this state, as well as with the state board. And Republicans who control that joined with Democrats, and in most cases, frankly, decided that those challenges did not rise to the appropriate level. They clearly demonstrated their willingness to cross their own party lines and to make those decisions as they saw appropriate to the law and applied the facts to them. And it certainly made some folks on our side unhappy. But I think it should be noted that they did their job. I think the gentleman from Harnett is perfectly correct when he says, when you have an even partisan split on the Board of Elections, moving forward, you will have to achieve a bipartisan consensus on how we move forward in these very critical areas. And if there's an issue with that down the road, then certainly the General Assembly can address it. But this is no coup. And I have noticed very carefully the board over the last several days when we have votes. Every member up there was democratically elected in a constitutional way. No one is challenging that. And the results that have been shown in the middle have on almost every occasion been done so by at least two-thirds of this body. That is the will of the people.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Lee, Representative Reeves, rise?
To debate the bill, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
I know everybody's tired and ready to go, so I'm going to cut most of my remarks, and I will make it very simple. One, I will tell you that there's always an election underway, despite what we've heard tonight. Two, I will tell you that I hope my comments aren't dismissed as rhetoric because I disagree. Disagreements, dialogue. Dialogue is what makes government good. Somebody disagreeing with you doesn't mean that what they're saying is rhetoric. Three, I would just like to say honestly and at the bottom of my heart, since most of us will be back in 2017, that I do not give a rat's rear about what some guy did 20 years ago that called himself a Democrat that I think is a wrong way to do business. So at least when we're discussing things that I happen to be involved with, I would just ask that nobody tell me, well, it's okay for me to do that because some guy 20 years ago did it and he said he's from the same party as you. Because as we all know from studying history, parties change, people change. You can't separate this state or any other place in this country into two groups that are homogeneous based on the letter behind their name. All I'm asking is this. Judges are part of one of the three branches of judgments that judges of our government that has been set up by our Constitution. If there's anybody who should be impartial, it's judges.
Mr. Speaker. For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Blust, rise?
Would the gentleman briefly yield for a question?
Does the gentleman from Lee yield to the gentleman from Guilford?
What the heck? I bet this was going to be good.
No, it's not good, but you've made a very good point that I think is salient
to a lot of issues we face. And you said just 20 years, something that may have happened 20 years ago, shouldn't be held against people or affect what we're doing now. Do you stand behind that proposition?
And that was the most amazing misstatement of what I said that I think you could have possibly done. That's an excellent piece of legal work. Let me say it a little more clearly since I wasn't. No, I don't stand behind your statement. I stand behind my statement that I can't be held responsible for what some man 20 years ago did that called himself a member of the party I'm affiliated with now. So if we're clear on that.
Mr. Speaker, may I ask his remark to be placed upon the journal?
That's good. I hope you. Listen to it. All right. If I may continue. What I'm saying is this. When you've got your judges, legislators write law. The executive branch executes law.
Without objection, so ordered.
Thank you. Your judges are there to interpret law. And they should be as impartial as you can make them. Yes, judges have been partisan before. Yes, both parties have loved the idea of partisanism when it's been good for them and they've been able to get their people elected. I don't elect judges based on that. I voted for Republican judges. I voted for Democratic judges. I vote because I want the person who can make the decision and interpret the Constitution. It's just that simple. So for that reason alone, I would ask that we set this bill back until we come up with a different way. Representative Stevens and Representative Cunningham themselves have already talked about ways that we can do this, but stop making everything partisan. It would just be nice one day if we got back to governing. If we got back one day to saying that, you know what, the letter behind your name is not a defining characteristic. Because candidly, if you feel that you know me because I've got a D behind my name and you know my positions on issues, you are sorely mistaken. If you think, for instance, having a D behind my name means I have a certain position on weapons, come to my home uninvited. If you feel that because you've got an R behind your name that I know your position on certain issues of religion and race and things of that sort, I would be angry with me if I judged you as such. I have got good friends across the aisle who have the exact same beliefs that I have on 99% of issues. But every time we walk in here, we've got some bill that we're running and we're saying, well, we need to know more about people. And this is a critical piece of information about that person. We know, all of us being elected, that we got a whole lot of friends that are in elected positions that were in a different party probably 15 years ago. That doesn't mean that that person has changed. So I feel compelled to make that statement. I feel compelled to say that. It's going to fall on deaf ears. I understand. But I hope somebody is listening. Because as things go, government's going to change. Some of us are going to be here for years working together and understand everything doesn't have to be partisan. Everything doesn't have to be about that. But I will always feel that judges and people on boards of education that are looking out for our children should be nonpartisan. I should feel they have no pressure from the machines that get some of us up here and the machines that run some of our parties. They should be out there on their own. And that's what we're here for. And that's not a Republican argument. That's not a Democratic argument. And I promise you, if the Democrats are in the majority, and if we are having this same conversation 5, 10, 15 years from now, I will say the same thing. Those two areas should be sacrosanct. At some point, at some level, we've got to decide that there are things we're just going to leave alone. You can dominate every government in this state and this country without making either of those two areas partisan. Easily. We write law. Why do we have to have the judicial branch also? So for that reason alone, I would ask for your no vote. Again, if you've made up your mind, I understand. But I'm not going to do what I've heard some speakers do today and presume that you've made up your mind for some particular reason. I'm going to give you all the benefit of the doubt that you support or don't support this bill based on the right reasons. But if you in your mind have an inkling of changing your position, this is a time to change the position. Because we need that judicial branch to be as impartial as it can be. Can you take politics out of everything? No. We can't take politics about what kind of coffee we're going to have in the break room. We can't take it out of what kind of popcorn we're going to get served. Politics is everywhere. but you can reduce the influence. And you have a chance in your position, having a supermajority, to begin that process. But if all we're going to do is keep going back and forth when whoever's got the majority and just say, well, I'm going to do it because those guys did it, then government's never going to get right. And at some point in time, government can get right. Everything doesn't have to be partisan. We understand there are things that you're going to run just because you can. I get that. But everything doesn't have to be that. And again, I apologize for taking time. I know everybody wants to go home, but there are times that I feel better that I've said it. So I've said it, so when I have the conversation later privately, I don't have to hear somebody say, well, man, you should have told me that before. I've told you. So thank you, Mr. Speaker, for allowing me to speak uninterrupted. Thank you, Representative Bluss, for allowing me to continue without asking me any more questions. And I hope everybody has a Merry Christmas.
For what purpose does the gentleman from further discussion, further debate? For what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hall, rise?
Speak on the bill.
The gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and appreciate all the members being in tune to this discussion. Just wanted to clarify a few items that were put out, and of course, everybody's entitled to their own opinion, but when we get to facts, sometimes we want to create our own facts. And as I mentioned before, it's my position that this session was not properly noticed. Therefore, we're here unconstitutionally, and any bills we're dealing with unconstitutionally. With that said, for the record, I will be voting no on this. Want to make sure, though, that some information that was provided regarding issues that surround this bill, Representative Stam brought forward and said back in 1999 that a bill was put forward to do something similar to our Court of Appeals. And of course, he neglected to inform you it was not done in special session, was not done in a session in which there was no notice to the public, and it was not done after the majority had changed. So, although that's a fact that something happened in 99, some folks would say it was an irrelevant fact. I want to also reference the...
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Dollar, rise?
To see if the gentleman would yield for a question.
Does the gentleman from Durham yield to the gentleman from Wake?
No, I will not, in respect to the other member's time.
The gentleman does not live. The gentleman from Durham has the floor to continue debating the bill.
Additionally, wanted to note that as regards the changes to the boards of elections, a person observing this from the outside might decide that these boards are now set up so nothing happens. We have a supermajority requiring 6 of 8 total, and then we have a supermajority in order for that board to make any decision. 6 people at a minimum have to agree. Then we divide the board in half, so we set up the most likely situation of disagreement, and voila, we have a board that does nothing, and whatever is happening is allowed to continue to happen. Now, you would wonder, why would we make these changes when Representative Dollar let us know that the boards currently constituted with Republican majorities appointed by the governor throughout the state function admirably, at least at the local levels? And he even, Representative Burr, went on to point out the great service done by citizens and voters in Durham and the great work done by that elections board in Durham, which is chaired by a Republican. So we got a testimony that there's no problem with our local elections boards and therefore really no reason to do what we're doing to them, especially without notice to the public. And I keep coming back to what the Constitution says, all political powers vested in and derived from the people. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. All government of right originates from the people and is founded upon their will only. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And certainly don't try to fix it if you don't let the folks know that you're going to interfere with their process. And it's instituted solely for the good of the whole. We've already seen, especially regarding our elections boards, as was attested to by Representative Dollar, that they're already capable of and have admirably performed under the current status. So there's no justification, no reason, no study, no public demand, no poll, nothing brought forward to indicate that the public asked for this change. They didn't ask for the session. They didn't ask for the change. Yet here we are. And so what is the distinguishing factor? Well, we know we had an election that people are unhappy with. And people are unhappy because the boards of elections also verified that election. They certified it and did their duty, as Representative Dollar said, but some people still have a problem with that. So let's create the board of elections. Let's say they're nonpartisan or bipartisan, but set them up in a way that they will be totally ineffective. That is not in the best interest of North Carolinians on any level. So I, again, oppose the bill. I think we shouldn't be here. I think the courts have already said that we're constituted unconstitutionally because of the way the districts are drawn. And so if you are elected from an unconstitutional district, although technically you might say you are representing people, you know that it's been determined those districts were drawn improperly. Again, at some point in time, we're going to have to give up some of the power to the people we represent. We supposedly work for them. We supposedly respond to their needs. And clearly, especially regarding this Board of Elections provision, there was no need. There was no request. There was no demand. I go back to the statement that Representative Torbett made, and I'm at the time I heard it, I was not sure if that was really what he meant, but I'll take him at his word. And we were in a committee meeting. He said the thought of letting the public.
Mr. Speaker, for what purpose does the gentleman depart? Representative Lewis rise?
To a question of privilege.
The gentleman may state his privilege.
I'm trying to listen to the remarks from the gentleman from Durham, and it's very difficult to hear because of the disruptive noise outside the chamber.
The chair appreciates the gentleman's and notes the chair hears the same disruption. The gentleman from Durham continues to have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I was commenting, the statement from Representative Torbett was the thought of letting the public comment never crossed my mind. And I would say that should be one of the first things that crosses our minds is what is the public concerned about? What are we doing to help and respond to them? And we should be wary about only responding to ourselves and getting the impression that the public works for us as opposed to our duty to work for the public. Mr. Speaker, I understand that some folks may have had a problem hearing my comments, and so I would ask that they be spread across the journal. I'll be voting against this bill. Thank you.
Is there objection to the comments being spread across the journal? Objected to? Does the gentleman wish to make that in the form of a motion that his comments be spread upon the journal?
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
The gentleman has made a motion the comments be spread upon the journal. For what purpose does the gentleman from Harnett, Representative Lewis, rise?
Just an inquiry to the chair. The
gentleman may state his inquiry.
So the body can understand and the rules chair can remind himself, for a matter to be spread upon the journal, it must be reduced to writing and submitted to the clerk. Is that correct?
That is indeed correct. The gentleman would need to do that. Otherwise, the clerk staff would have to spend considerable time going through, replaying the audio and doing the same.
So may I ask the gentleman from Durham?
Does the gentleman from Durham yield to a question from the gentleman from Harding?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, yes. I do.
Thank you, Representative Fall. Is it your intent to reduce this, your remarks to writing and submit them to the clerk?
Absolutely.
I would encourage the gentleman
Mr.
to
Speaker,
look at the, just a moment, I'd encourage the gentleman to review the rules, the limitations, and so forth.
Mr. Speaker.
I believe I saw the gentleman from Wake first, then I'll come to the gentleman from Guilford. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Jackson, rise?
Or inquire the chair.
The gentleman may state his inquiry.
Mr. Speaker, is not Representative Hall, as a duly elected member of this assembly, entitled to Articles 2, Section 18 of our Constitution, to dissent from and protest against any act or resolve which he may think injurious to the public or any individual, and have the reasons of his dissent entered on the House Journal?
He may. He did not ask for a protest, however. The gentleman asked that his remarks be spread across the journal. Should the gentleman wish to have his
remarks reduced to writing and file and entered as a protest, that is an entirely different procedure. The chair will, if the gentleman would like to amend his request, the chair will certainly accept that.
It's my understanding, Mr. Speaker, that I do not have to make a request in order to have Article 2, Section 18 petition filed. Is that correct?
That is correct. If the gentleman wishes to have his remarks filed, it's the same effect. If the gentleman wants his remarks put in as a protest, he should just simply do it the same way that Representative Jackson did. Or if the gentleman wants to do that, the chair will certainly accept that and will be noted. That will be noted as such.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I will elect to have the comments spread upon the journal. We'll reduce them and to writing for the clerk, and also we'll file the petition. Thank you.
Is the gentleman asking that it be done as a protest, which doesn't require a vote? Is that what the gentleman's asking?
I'm not requiring it to be a protest. I'm going to submit the comments to the clerk to be spread on the journal, and we'll file the separate protest as it is our right.
Okay, so the gentleman is asking for a motion to spread his comments upon the journal,
Mr.
that he's
going
to reduce the writing as well as that. For what purpose does the gentleman from Guilford, Representative Blustrass?
Ask Representative Hall if he'd yield for a question.
Does the gentleman from Durham yield to the gentleman from Guilford?
I yield.
He yields.
Representative Hall, I have no objection really to your spreading remarks upon the journal, but I'd request that you withdraw that motion, because then I feel like something contrary needs to be placed upon the journal, and I might feel compelled to speak and ask for my remarks to be spread upon the journal and other members also, because this is an important issue, and I just want to see the journal reflect both sides of the spectrum.
Well, Mr. Speaker, if I could respond.
Sorry, for what purpose does the gentleman from Durham, Representative Hall?
I think I was asked a question. Could I
absolutely
respond?
The gentleman has the floor for response.
Well, certainly I want all members to avail themselves of all the opportunities and rights of members, and I would certainly join in anyone who is wanting to have their remarks spread across the journal. I would be in full support of that. I like you, believe that this is an important matter, and the record should be as complete as we can make it. So I, at this point in time, make a blanket support statement for any members who want to spread their comments across the journal after reducing them to writing and submitting them to the clerk. Thank you.
For what purpose, the gentleman from Hartnett, Representative Lewis, rise.
Mr. Speaker, I'd like to debate the motion.
Did the gentleman want to remove his objection to the journal request?
Yes, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to.
Anybody else have an objection to the journal request on that?
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Burke, Representative Blackwell, rise?
I have a point of parliamentary inquiry.
The gentleman may state his parliamentary inquiry.
When we spread our remarks on the journal, does that indicate that they are the exact remarks made before the House, or does that mean that we can go out and create remarks and bring them back and put into the journal that which was not said on the House floor?
And in conferring with the clerk, Representative Blackwell, it should be the actual remarks that the member made, that they actually made while on the House floor. They can't go out and,
Mr. Speaker,
they can't stand up on the floor of the House and say the sky is blue and then come in and present remarks saying that the sky is red. I mean, they have to be an accurate representation.
For the point of inquiry?
The gentleman may state his additional inquiry.
So does that mean that we can try to approximate our remarks and sort of get close, or do we have to try to, is there an audio available and we get it typed up and then present it to the clerk?
There is audio, there's an audio recording of everything that then goes to the web. It's there for the public, and if a member wishes to reduce those to writing to submit, that member must accurately reflect what was said at that time.
One final point.
Jim was recognized for an additional point.
I think I remember hearing some years ago that in Congress they can revise and extend their remarks and have those put in the Journal of the House or the Senate in Washington. Is there such a provision under our rules that you can revise and extend and put different language in the journal by doing something similar to that?
Fortunately, only in Washington can you say one thing on the floor and then say that you didn't say that. So
in North Carolina, at our draw rules, what you say on the House floor is, in fact, what your remarks have to be.
Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Martin, rise?
I move that the gentleman from Burke's remarks be spread across the journal.
Mr. Speaker.
The chair may object to that one. For what purpose does the lady from Mecklenburg, Representative Carney, rise?
Parliamentary inquiry of the chair.
The lady's recognized for parliamentary inquiry.
I'm really trying to understand here. I thought I knew all these rules. Representative Blust, in the last debate with Representative Reeves, requested that Representative Reeves' words be spread across the journal. Mm-hmm. Representative Hall asked that his be spread across the journal. Does Representative Blust have to enter into writing Representative Reeves' comments in order for that to happen?
Yes, he would.
Question of Representative Blust.
Does the gentleman from Guilford yield to the lady from Mecklenburg?
Is it your intent to take those words and put them in writing for the journal from Representative?
I'll have that done. All I ask was his response to the question to be entered on the journal, so it will be a very short entry.
Mr. Speaker.
And the chair did say without objection. The chair believed that was a very short, and the gentleman quickly said yes, so it seemed that both parties consented at that time. For what purpose does the gentleman from Duplin, Representative Dixon, rise?
Mr. Speaker, I am very interested in Representative Carney's dialogue, and I'm being disturbed by the noise outside.
Chair notes the disruption continues. For what purpose does the gentleman from Union, Representative Horn, rise?
Ask chair question.
Gentleman's recognized.
Why are we doing this? We are wasting a heck of a lot of time about spreading across the journal. Want your remarks. You want them spread. We want them this spread and that spread. I would, in sincerity, ask the speaker to dismiss this conversation. Let's get back to business. Yeah.
As to the spreading upon the journal from Representative Hall under the stipulations pursuant to the rules, did any member have an objection?
All right. Mr. Speaker.
For what purpose is the gentleman from Ash?
Inquiry of the speaker.
The gentleman may state his inquiry.
Is there anything in our rules that say that the words to be spread across the journal have to have any particular impact or substance or anything of any great importance?
I don't believe the rules require that, but it's Rule 11, members. I just ask you to look at that on page 112 of your rules. It's the reading of papers is what this is. When there is a call for the reading of the text of a paper which has been presented to the House and there is objection to such reading, the question shall be determined by a majority vote of the members of the House present. Except for protest permitted by the Constitution, no member may have material printed in the journal until said material has been presented to the House and the printing approved by the House. And said material shall not exceed 1,000 words. So, really, it would appear we may need to get it in writing before we decide if I'm giving the literal reading. So the chair is going to do this. The chair is going to rule that both in the case of Mr. Hall's request and in Mr. Blush's request, that both of those matters will be reduced to writing, then submitted to the chair, and then at that time, the chair will call for any objections to being spread upon the journal. And if there is objections, the House will vote. That is the decision of the chair. For what purpose does the gentleman from Wake, Representative Pendleton, rise?
Mr. Speaker, I am the Veterans Administration declared me partially disabled because of hearing problems, and I'm really having a hard time hearing.
Thank you. The gentleman notes the difficulty in parties hearing. Further discussion, further debate on, I believe, Senate Bill 4 is actually the piece of legislation before us. Further discussion, further debate. Seeing none, the question for the House is the passage of Senate Bill 4 on its second reading. Those in favor will vote aye. Those opposed will vote no. The clerk will open the vote. The clerk will lock the machine and record the vote.
63 having voted in the affirmative and 27 in the negative. Senate Bill 40 passes its second reading. Will be read a third time.
General Assembly North Carolina next.
For what purpose does the gentleman from Gaston, Representative Torbett, rise?
Speak on the bill, please. The
gentleman has the floor to debate the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In a recent comments by the current minority leader, Representative Hall, my name was mentioned. I just wanted to clarify something for members of this body. His comments were exactly correct. And although taken somewhat out of context, I would like to express and tell the whole story, as it were. One of the committees we had today, Representative Lewis was chairing, and he was going to present the bill and asked me to chair. Prior to that, I pretty much wasn't aware I was going to chair, and so as things were moving at somewhat of a clip and we were getting down to the end of business and back and forth, I had not yet come to the end of the committee meeting and was moving rather fast and had not thought about the process getting towards the end, of which time Representative from Wake made a comment, do we intend to hear any public speakers on that, which at that time I made a remark that in my mind was at that time it hadn't crossed my mind, but directing to the clerk saying, what do we intend to do for the process for public speaking? We arrived at the process and had open comments from the public, and I think they were provided 2 minutes to speak. We had several people sign up and go through the speaking process. So nothing nefarious was there. Just wanted to explain that to members of the body, and thank you for the time, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion or further debate? If not, the question before the House is the passage of Senate Bill 4 on its third reading. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The House Committee substitute for Senate Bill 4, having passed its third reading, bill is ordered engrossed and returned to the Senate.